Well, I am a seeker like everyone. So during my medical days in FMC Pune, the existential questions became very loud and strong inside me as to what is the purpose of all of this. I knew that I would join one of the military's branches, and given my age and all the things, so I could easily rise to the highest ranks. And of course, I was doing medicine, but it didn't appeal that it's like a very limited frame. So what is it that is the meaning of life? Because if there is no meaning, so my logic went like this, that, well, if there is, if at the end of my search, I find there is no meaning, then it doesn't matter because anyways, there is no meaning. So, any which way is okay.
There's a logic to that.
Yeah, there was a logic because my mind was very, very analytical.
Rational.
So I believed.
Did you feel you were an empiricist? You wanted evidence for everything?
Not evidence, but at least a reason. Because evidence comes later. First, I should be clear that there is reason enough to pursue what I am pursuing. Then evidence is the next level. So yes, evidence, but evidence comes subsequently.
Experiential evidence.
Yes,
exactly.
Experiential evidence in so many other ways. So that was later. Okay. So I used to read a lot and I had read a lot of Western, Indian, grown up in traditions, so every possible.
Where did you grow up in India?
I grew up in a place called in Jharkhand, modern Jharkhand, some small little place. Later on, I discovered that Sri Aurobindo must have crossed this place several times on his way to Devgar. But that's a very personal side of it. So I used to read a lot from the Vedas, various tikas on that, the Upanishads little later, and of course the Ramayana, the Mahabharata, and every possible literature I could lay my hands on. Stories, Puranas.
Everything, itihas.
Along with my other stuff.
Right.
So, though I enjoyed all of it, but ultimately it went off to what is the meaning. So I started reading mystics, the Gita, of course, and mystics, Sri Ramakrishna, Swami Vivekananda. They impressed me a lot, but my problem was, now that's where it comes to, that, well, if this is an illusion, then who is the seeker? Who is the man who is liberated? Later on, I discovered that Ashtavakra Gita talks about it, but that was later. Who is getting free? This is just an illusion.
The Ramana question. Who is it?
Who is it?
Who is it?
Second, I had my issues with the traditional understanding of theory of karma.
Did you study Western philosophy as well?
I had
you were balancing everything.
Kant, these very young
guys. Meister Eckhart, everything.
Quite a bit of it.
Okay.
Marcus Aurelius. A lot of...
You were a stoic audio for a while.
Homer, yes. So, but the answer to this question, what is the purpose? Because if it is ultimately an illusion or a maya, then what really is the purpose in this? To get out of it into moksha, even if we grant that there is something called as an individual entity which actually gets moksha, still it made no sense because then who put me in it? So, and why?
So liberation can't be the only out.
I mean, I understand that, well, I got in here somehow, but the whole point is that if the journey is beautiful, then I understand that, okay, somebody sent me on an excursion, very lovely, and now I have to get back into moksha. But this is not a very lovely excursion, you know, it's
bloody pain.
It's quite a rough ride, and even though, frankly, my life was very, very nice, I mean, everything I got just as I proceeded, there was no struggle that way. But life is there all around, so how could it be? And my third issue was that even if I get an individual moksha, then what happens to those who are suffering? They continue to be, you know, struggling. So all these questions ultimately led me to the grand door of agnosticism.
The ideal one. The earlier, the first stage towards true knowledge.
Not atheism, but an agnosticism that this is not for me. Moksha is certainly not for me. It's selfish. And just leading a worldly life with all these things makes no sense. Equally, probably people in Pune, they used to, there was a hash joint nearby. So I thought these people who are taking to drugs are probably
better off,
better, more logical people, because if there is nothing really, then all this was going on. So agnosticism, to cut a long story
short. So how old were you at this time?
All before 20.
So you were already a psychiatrist in the Air Force?
No, psychiatrist came later. So I was studying my medicine, MBBS.
Okay. So all this happening in your young
all this, simultaneous, parallel worlds.
Were you married already at that time?
No.
Okay.
So all this, of course, in great detail, it's all over the YouTube, all my long journey part, long part of the journey. But then by the time I came out of my MBBS, I got a license to save or kill. Medicine also, I just wondered, what is this pure chemical manipulation? Is man just a bundle of chemicals? Is he just chemistry? And that was not very pleasing to my innate sense. are we just simply babbling brilliant neurons?
Automatons.
Automatons? Yeah. Just a machine?
Correct.
So there is something in you, like an intuitive sense, which says, it can't be just this. And if it is just this, then what am I doing prescribing medicine? So this was, all these were going on. At the end of the day, I said there are no answers, because whatever doors I approached, there were no final answers to my quest. There were answers, but all half answers as far as I was concerned. And then at that point, I said, okay, anyways, I don't believe in quitting life, so let me be a good human being and a good doctor. So I downscaled my aims. That's good enough. And so in that state, once I was transiting through Delhi on posting from Jorhat, which is in far east of India, to Bikaner, which is western side, in Air Force. So in Delhi, I was...
Were you dealing with trauma in the Air Force? Or you were seeing...
That time, all the ranks of things.
All the war, right, traumas, everything.
Yeah, everything. So you because I was a general officer at that time.
Oh, you were a GP and a psychiatrist.
Psychiatrist comes later. Because that's a post-graduation. Okay. So then that time, I entered a bookstore just randomly out of my...
In Delhi?
Yeah. Old
Khan Market. Not place.
And there I just, my eyes straight away fell on a book where on the spine it was written, The Synthesis of Yoga, Sri Aurobindo. Now that name did something. It's like falling in love with the name. And I said, who is this? I've never read, because I had read practically every book you can name from yogi mystics. So I said, what is it that I have not read? So it's quite arrogant, Something appealed in the name. So I opened the book and it was written, All Life is Yoga. Now, I didn't understand the meaning, but I felt I'm on cloud nine. I got it.
You got it immediately. Something at the molecular level.
Yes. And as you know, Jung would probably say, meaningful coincidences. Same evening, my friend who was going to New York to do his psychiatry, he gifted me The Secret of the Vedas of Sri Aurobindo, by Sri Aurobindo, saying that he wanted to get me The Synthesis of Yoga, but he couldn't find it.
So you found it.
After that, I was like, this is it. I don't know what is the content.
I don't care.
But something tells me this is what I had to read and I have not read it. And as I started reading, believe me, page after page, every chapter, the experience would come to me. Not just intellectually, I would experience it, which included things like oneness. It's difficult to explain mentally.
How old are you this time?
22.
My God.
And that time...
Early.
And as things would have it, I was sent to Thois, which is a place on the foothills of, base camp as you go to Siachen.
Okay.
So that's where it's, Ladakh, and then you go to Thois further up, Leh Ladakh. So I had very interesting experience in Ladakh, in that Leh, in that monastery. There is a monastery out there. But that apart, when I went there, for 3 months I was shut with very little work. It's just a posting where you have to be present. So I was reading The Synthesis and it was like, this should never end. I could spend my whole life there, and I used to love solitude. It's a different thing. Now my life is everything except solitude.
Well, I think that the universe conspired to give that,
make sure
that job over there. You know, like.
Yes, those were my, if you ask me, the most beautiful months when I saw no one except maybe an odd emergency call. And I was shut in the room reading this book with wonderful experience. I would take a walk in the evening when the, you know, sun has set. Moon would come up very early and sun would set very early because it's in the mountains and there was a Shyok River. I mean, amazing.
Beautiful.
So anyways, that was the initiation. And after that, I didn't feel that I need to know anything. I didn't know about ashram, didn't know about anything. I was like, this is it.
That's
finished. Cool.
Yeah. All answers.
And then Sri Aurobindo and the mother started coming from every side. I switch on at, okay, by them. Just then I was married. 6 months down my marriage, this happened. So that's when I'm 23. So then I would start wondering, why did I get married? No problem with my wife. She's so wonderful. She's now in the ashram. But I just feel like doing this, pursuing this. Now I'm married and I'm in the Air Force. They won't leave me. So all this, but I said, doesn't matter. Let me pursue. And then posting, several things happened. One of the experiences with which I'll, you know, leave it open. I was walking in Patiala. Next posting was Patiala. So many things were happening, but a very concrete experience. So as I was walking along with my wife, we were taking there are narrow roads, places in India you'll find quite narrow road. Though it's a town, but quite narrow roads and trucks are going whizzing past. We have to be pretty careful. So we were taking a walk to come back to the Air Force mess where I wanted to watch a movie. Mm. Both of us. And as I was walking, inwardly, she was saying something and inwardly I was thinking, there is God, why doesn't he reveal? Suddenly all this aspiration came in great intensity and I experienced the descent of tremendous peace passing right from above, down, around the bus. The trucks were as if miles away, as if everything became like a non-existent reality, like the Maya experience. And I went to the mess, both of us. The thing is, interesting part of the experience is not what I experienced, but suddenly my wife also became very silent. Mm. So I asked her, are you feeling something? She said, yes. Are you feeling something? I said, yes. So we didn't feel like speaking anything. We just sat for a while in the movie, but that time the world was like a movie with no meaning.
Nothing mattered.
So we came out, lot of mosquitoes, nothing mattered. Dinner, nothing mattered. So we said, let's not do anything, just sleep over it. So we slept over. No food, nothing. Because nothing mattered. And I still remember next day by 10 o'clock in the morning, all this experience began to fade and eventually faded in the background. So that was a very powerful contact. And then, of course, the journey had begun. My first marriage anniversary. I don't believe in forcing anyone, converting anyone to anything. I believe in total freedom to follow your own way or no way. Everything is a way.
Pathless path.
So, I mean, it's a unique journey for each one. So at that point of time, my wife, she came from a certain background where people follow a certain guru. I said, it's perfectly fine if you want to do that, whatever you want to do. But for me, it was clear that this is me. And then on our first marriage anniversary, so 6 months down the line, all this is happening. Then first marriage anniversary, I was on temporary duty to Bangalore under a set of wonderful, what people would say coincidences. I entered into a place, Sri Aurobindo Bhavan, and there she came to hear something on the mother. I'm just cutting a very long story short. And there she had a wonderful experience.
She did.
No, she saw the mother everywhere.
Suddenly revealed.
And started crying and crying for 2 hours, this country about. And I wondered if she is now, I have another patient. My psychiatrist part came up. So I said, let us see. So after 2 hours, she came out. I said, what happened? She said, nothing. She didn't feel like speaking. So that was gift on our first marriage anniversary. I gifted her of all the things, first marriage anniversary, no, you should give something nice. I gifted her the mother's prayers and meditations. I said, this is the best thing I can imagine at this point of time. More than solitaire, more than anything else. So this what? Poor guy.
No diamonds needed.
Nothing. That is more than diamond. So well, that's how the journey
but
started.
You are 24 years old, both of you.
Yeah, yeah, both of us.
And all this is
she
being
was,
real.
Of course, 22. So I
even younger.
Younger, 21. So younger. But then, well, like.
How did you first come here?
So then, after that, literally, as I said, from every side, somebody suddenly tells me about ashram. I say, I don't feel inclined because I had by then agnostic stamp was there. Nothing external,
like
all inside.
Like this.
And all inside. You don't need. And I was experiencing. I'm experiencing everything inside. So I don't feel the need to
no temple.
Go to an ashram,
no
temple and all. I'd
nothing.
Given up long
ago. Shed it all.
I'd shed it, absolutely, because of various reasons, but that's a whole past story. So, it so happened that from one place I'm moving to another and Pondicherry is on the way.
Yeah.
And so people kept telling me Pondicherry, ashram and all. I said, anyway, I'm going, let me see. So both of us came. But see how mother played a trick. I thought I have to come to ashram, but I had all this in mind. You don't need to bow to anyone. You don't need to, you know, worship anyone. All this was all strong. So as soon as I get on to the bus stand here in Pondicherry, some auto rickshaw comes and says, Auroville. I thought Auroville is same as ashram. I said, yes, Matri Mandir. I said, oh, there must be a temple there also. Anyway, I stayed for 2 days in Auroville, came back without knowing there is a place like ashram. And I was so happy. See, they don't even have a samadhi. Such
no temple, no
nothing. No temple, no samadhi. I was very happy.
Universal religion.
Universal religion. I didn't know what I missed. And then next time, again a set of...
You missed it the whole together, that trip.
Yes.
That's you never even saw the ashram.
I thought I have seen the ashram. And people ask me about this person, that
he
person.
A beautiful golden dome.
I said, no. Yeah, no. There was no
dome. There was no dome then.
There was no dome. There was no mandir really. It was still in the
basement. There's a banyan tree.
Yes, and construction.
That's right.
That's where the auto rickshaw left me in the middle of nowhere. So Matri Mandir, I said, where is Mandir? I said, maybe some. Anyway, so that's when next time again under a set of strange circumstances, very interesting, but the that's not so important. I again came, this time I came alone, and I was sitting at the beach. And I had a strange experience. Our experience is very vivid, but when I came out of it, my wife was not there with me, but she was there in the experience. It was a vision, of course, with me and her lying in the mother's lap. And as I was coming up, I'm thinking, is this hallucination? Now, you know, my...
Rational mind.
Rational mind, my medical mind is beginning to kick in. So I'm thinking, is this hallucination? There used to be rocks earlier, you know, a whole layer of rocks through which you climb to the main promenade which you see today. As I was climbing, I suddenly lost balance or slipped on the rock and I fell. But very strangely, as I'm feeling, I'm experiencing hands holding me like a flower placing me on the rocks. And I'm experiencing bliss actually. And that's when somebody who was with me, an elderly person from the ashram, Dr. Maheshwari, he saw me slip down and he suddenly called my name, Alok. Then I realized, oh, he will be worried. I said, all is good. And I walked up in a daze, wonderful day, not a scratch, nothing. I mean, I didn't even feel an impact. Now, this is so strange. And I narrated to him that just then another ashram inmate was coming. He said, why don't you tell him about it? So I told him, he said, why don't you ask your wife? What did she experience anything?
Oh,
this was objective.
You seen her in the vision?
Yes. Now this is very
you
objective because
in the lap of my mother,
and I have seen her dress. So I phoned her. She was in Delhi. Around this time, did you experience something? She said yes. I was feeling. She's like a typical Kshatriya Punjabi girl, fearless. She said I was feeling as if I am going to die, which is very unusual.
Like complete?
Complete. And terrible headache was happening about 15 minutes before this experience of mine. And so they were all, while the family was going out for a outing, she refused because she was very unwell. And she says, suddenly, magically, at that point of time, which, I asked that later, confirm, everything got vanished. So I was wondering what happened, but then she didn't care about it. So I asked her, what was the sari you were wearing? And it's just the same sari.
No.
So that was like a very objective
evidence.
Evidence. Though I was not looking for an objective evidence, because I was having a lot of subjective, even objective experiences. So then it was like, this is the place. I went to the ashram. There again, lot of things. I was pushed into the queue to Sherbindo's room. And I mean, it was very clear that what I missed last time, and it was like, I was finished. Frankly finished. And then the mother came again, plenty of things. Just one small little incident, which was before all this has happened. During my internship, I've just finished MBBS. I have not come across the synthesis of yoga.
Okay.
And we are, three of us, we are going to watch a movie, English movie, in Kolkata. I was in Kolkata doing internship. And I suddenly said, I don't think I'm interested. I would prefer to walk back to the hospital. And as I'm walking, my feet strained to a place where it is written some exhibition and all. When I went inside, they said, there is no exhibition, it's over. I said, anyway, this place looks nice. So I go into the courtyard, and there I saw Sherbindo's bust. Now, I didn't know anything that this is Sherbindo's bust. But I literally, as if it's like a very subtle voice, if I can say, running through like a sentence here. The most perfect human form ever upon earth. I don't know why. And I sat down, I meditated, I mean spontaneous meditation for 20 minutes, came out in a state of bliss, didn't notice what place is it. Much later I came to know this is where Sherbindo was born. But that was later. And then of course, plenty of things, like I could write books on this and even talks to close it up all. I am like nothing really, I felt like I need to do something, walk on this path of yoga. She was caring. And then again, people from various situations, outer, that, you know, I should speak. But I wanted a very clear guidance from mother before I get into this.
When did you make the final move to come and live here?
So move to come and live here was within, you know,
you were ready.
Late mid-90s.
Nah.
That means 7-8 years down the line. By then, I've finished my MD. And whoever I requested, my seniors in Air Force, they don't let you go easily. They would all say no. And one of them said, you have got very good annual confidential reports, so we can't let you go.
Oh, you're top secret.
Yeah. So I said, please spoil my reports. He went to that extent. So
he sabotaged whatever you can do.
They laughed at him. No, we can't do it. Now you have done your MD. So I kept trying and I won't get it. And it's mother's ways that just when I hit 20 years, which is a minimum pension, I gave up that now nobody will release me because now I am the gainer. So, why would government release me? One of my patient's father, he became the top man in UFOs. And he called me up. He said, hello, put in your papers. I said, sir, are you sure? He said, I will see to it. I know you want to.
Liberation.
So
that is your liberation day.
Your
liberation day.
2003, I was here in Pondicherry.
You moved lock, stock and barrel.
Yeah.
Both of
my
you.
Wife had come earlier, few years earlier, because my son got admission. I have one son.
Oh, he has his ashes.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So I have one son. So in 95, she moved in.
So she had already become an inmate.
Yeah, she became an inmate subsequently, but she was offering work in Shabda. Still she is in Shabda, Kavita, and she...
And your son is studying outside?
He finished, he went to Sheffield. He's a journalist. Then he went to France to do some internship. He now runs a company called 42. It's a social media company for sports people.
Yes, I've heard about that.
Yeah, yes. So he lives now in Pondicherry, but moves all over. Right.
So, I mean, the example of...
It's all mother's way. Because biggest thing was my wife's
transformation
on her own, accepting and choosing to come here. Otherwise, life would have been
missed. Even the two of you brought together is another play.
Yeah.
That was much bigger than you. I think she was sent to wake you up.
Yeah, yeah. When I look back, I see it all as one single movement.
One single movement, right?
But that time you don't understand why things are happening the way they are happening. And of course, I believe that, you know, your partner should be such who can keep you grounded. Now, fill in the blanks of the meanings.
As a Bengali, I can tell you, my wife is a Punjabi Puri also. And she knows how to keep me grounded.
Exactly. So it helps you, and this has been a wonderful synergy that way. Though, well, she now, my both son and daughter-in-law, they are living together in Pondicherry.
Oh, they moved here?
Ah, they live here now.
Nobody leaves.
I live in Desiree Pitch because I have to, they need a doctor to be there.
Yes, I've heard that you see patients every morning.
From morning till evening.
That's good.
This was one of
your seva.
One of my prayers to Mother, I want to be 24/7 in your service. How can you be 24/7? I thought, then it used to come to me like an auto rickshaw driver. He is waiting for you. So he is serving. So that famous line is, they do serve, wait. So I said, okay, that way. But how will you wait? So then, being in this place, I realized that I am 24/7 service because I am always there for any patient, any emergency. So this was the closest.
It's like Rabindranath Tagore poem, now the gardener.
Yeah. Yes, said, yes.
You
yes.
will wait. Yes. Or sit by the fire. If somebody comes from the village, I should wait here in case somebody comes from the village.
So it's a wonderful journey. That's all. The journey of
grace. So let us move now to your... I don't want the history of Sri Aurobindo and the mother. That we can all study him.
Yes.
What was his greatest contribution in your mind to the evolution of human psychology today? That's what I'm interested in.
So, I've in fact even written a kind of series of articles on that, but I could start with most subtle one. I'll come to the cross verse. Subtlest is, because I have experienced this, hope and promise of the future. It may look, what is there? But in a world where we are dismayed and depressed, looking at things all around, Sri Aurobindo gives a hope. Not just hope that all will be well, but mankind is moving towards a luminous destiny. That's something wonderful. Something worth engaging in. We don't want just hope and promises.
Or liberation.
Yeah. But something which is about the world. World is moving towards a grand event. And very logically, of course, I used to also feel logically, if there is a divine here, it must have a divine ending. That's how I used to feel. And then given up because nobody spoke about it. So it was very clearly, this is the greatest contribution if you ask me, but this is something which is very subtle. You have to read it through. The second is that this feeding this aspiration of man towards terrestrial perfection, because I always ask this question now to people who want moksha, that if the world was a perfect place where everything is beautiful, there is no dukkham to start with. The first premise of, you know, Dhammapad. If there is no dukkham, would you still want liberation? Second question I ask is, if there was a possibility that life could become perfect, whether it would or not is different, but there is a sliver of a chance, would you like to give yourself into it for it? And that possibility, that aspiration, which is, I believe, burns in everybody's heart. And to my understanding, depression and all this, largely because we want perfection. Paradoxical it may seem. It may be full of unhappiness. Even the suicidal person is still
Seeking that.
That maybe things will become better.
And an idealism.
So, you know, this depression, because we want perfection, but we don't know. We don't get it. We don't even know what it would mean, because perfection for us is my wish fulfillment. So this is where it is the key to the problem, that mankind actually aspires for terrestrial perfection. Even the greatest Mayavadins or Mokshvadins would still, you know, engage with life. He may give 100 reasons after hearing
Mahayana.
Mahayana is wonderful, of course. include the whole cosmos within it.
All sentient.
Yeah, yeah. And, but the thing is that ultimately he would, that's the famous thing of the Buddha. I love that part since you mentioned. So, you know, this is something which is inbuilt in us. We are programmed as if to somehow progress and somehow find ways and means to make life perfect. Whatever one may say, whatever one may believe, this is our instinctive hardwiring. But when we are told that it's not possible, then the next option is, okay, life is terrible.
Nihilism.
Yeah, nihilism and all the other possibilities come up. So he fed that aspiration, validated. I would say he validated what we deeply long. And not only validated, but showed us a way. So the integral yoga, supramental yoga, I'm not going into all that, his work of the new consciousness, which alone can change us and change the conditions of earth. All that is there all over. So this is another very wonderful contribution. Then of course, when we come to, you know, in everyday life, by his own example, which I feel is a, you know, it's difficult to read through the books and get what he's trying to show. And in India, there has been a parallel method of, one is you read the Vedas, Upanishads, the Gita. Another is the life of Rama, Krishna, Ramayana.
I have the stories.
So, it's so powerful. Shri Krishna speaks of it in the Gita. God's own example. He speaks of that. And when you read his life, you know how to move through. Because he has everything possible in his life. And if you add mother's life, they've gone through like married, mother married twice, had a child. Shurbindo went through all the possible, you know, studied abroad and then got a cushy job. And then, you know, as a revolutionary, of course.
Gone the British.
Yes, so took on the British. So already very, very, more dangerous man. Very, very inspiring that this is our, because you need a concrete example. You don't want just theory. So you want somebody, so that's another, by living a life, he had left it.
So he was an example to study.
Yes.
To see what is the way we can also progress in that.
Yes, we can make our life sublime.
and leave behind footprints.
Footprints or the sands of time. And these are imprints which are so strong. And, you know, it'd be difficult now to, they cannot be erased, because now that imprint, which is the real work of the avatar of leaving an imprint upon life and matter. Each such life actually leaves an imprint and inspires many who are going to come. So this is another contribution. And then, of course, India's revolution. He is the one who had laid down all the lines through which freedom will come. But not only that, he also laid the lines along which India and the world should move toward the future. If I read through the foundations of Indian culture, his conversations, and the human cycle. He has written everything, including the perils of all that we are experiencing now. The limits of democracy, the perils of a world state, humanitarianism, internationalism, you name it. All the things that stir our minds. And he has given an answer. So it's so wonderful that he has given a blueprint of the future, which is another wonderful contribution. And then, of course, there are several places where he has given beautiful seed thoughts. For example, there is a whole science of the future, which people don't know, but there are about 100 pages worth of writings on the science of consciousness. Mm. So he has left incredible writings on looking at this whole creation from the point of view of consciousness. And now people are beginning to talk about it. And how that can change my practice in everyday life. How it can change the way I deal with a cup of tea. How it can change the way I deal in my relationships. How it can change the way I deal with material world. A whole science which is there, embedded as a seed. It's left to people to develop it.
So a kind of blueprint road.
Blueprint, yes.
Where we could go.
Where
the mind we could take us.
Yes, so.
But let me take you to another area now.
Yeah.
So.
And of course, just sorry to...
Sorry, please.
And of course, Savitri. I mean, his works...
That is the hardest one to read, but the best one to recite.
Yeah, ultimate. My
That's your favorite. That's your go-to.
Yes, yes.
That's a massive tome of poetry. Anybody gets a chance.
The longest
secret,
poem in English.
Read it and not analyze it. Yeah. You're supposed to read it. But my own pull was not him.
Okay.
It was the mother.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's, you have leaped through.
I came here thinking I would be understanding Sri Aurobindo, and I got wrapped up by the mother.
Yes.
Anandamayi came beautifully. Bliss came, right? And then I started studying her. You know, I read the vision. I read all the different writings. I prayed, you know, all of this. And the mother was the greatest integrator of his thinking into reality.
Yes.
You know? You know, that's what we felt, right, Alexa? You know, and I think that, you know, when I look at her 12 attributes, when I look at her 4 ways of working, when I look at her single point, you know, and I look at her art, her philosophy, her poetry, her sports.
Education.
You know, we're all sports people here also. You know, we loved it. So she was the great, really, executor of that integrative vision in a way.
And then the Ashan, Auroville society with all around, with amazing work.
Absolutely. So what? Let's now look at it that way. Without Sri Aurobindo, there would be no mother. Without the mother, there would be no Sri Aurobindo.
That's true.
So what was the, how did that spark then become all this through the mother? What was your interpretation of that?
Yeah, so of course for me also something similar happened. The moment the mother came to my life, it was all finished, completely taken over and flooded and drowned and whatever
you may say.
And just to, on a very personal note, my first command when I first saw the mother's picture, I had stopped bowing before anyone. This is before coming to ashram also. And in the center, I saw mother's picture and I just instinctively bowed. And as I bowed, there was a command, literally a command. This one I really sort of heard in a very subtle space. You'll laugh at it. Stop smoking. Because I was smoking. Yeah. And I had tried to stop smoking. Desperately 2 years, and I would come to 3 years. And I walked out of that room a free person. Never had
liberated. No more cigarettes.
Liberated. No more cigarettes. Automatically. It's like it was power. So yes. So how I look at it, that the Ishwara and Shakti, who are one, but for the purposes of that's where it comes, that Vedanta normally leans on the Ishwara aspect, which is who liberates you, the passive aspect, the Purusha.
Shiva.
Whereas Shakti is the one who manifests, which has been unfortunately, due to a misconception much later in the original Maya, meant very different. So Maya is the one which limits the infinite into the manageable sections.
Emanation.
Manageable sections. So, you know, if like somebody asked me, tell me something about the meeting. So I may say, use words like wonderful, you know, it was very lovely meeting, talking. But now if Maya operates, she will tell me all the details, I would say. This what I felt, this how, because Maya is the one measures out, Mata, Matra, that's all. Then because she measures out, you can identify with a part and forget the whole. Somebody may strike you as not very nice and I may say, oh, it was horrible because this person was not. Now that is avidya. And when I see the whole, that thing finds its right place, and that is vidya. So anyway, not going into it. So the mother is, represents that Shakti or the Adi Shakti who organizes, measures out all the dreams that Sri Aurobindo carries in his heart. She is the one who is the expressive power. Yes, make it. So it's very clear, and what Sri Aurobindo himself said, you have to turn to the mother, and all who are turned to the mother are doing my yoga. And it's so true that you can't take a step forward without her. So I also, absolutely, that's my experience. So Sri Aurobindo is very lovely, one loves him, and he is just, you know, what shall I say, for want of words, he is very compassionate, he's great and wonderful. But he's like sitting on the Himalayan peak or moving in the galaxies, amidst the galaxies. But mother comes here and takes us by the hand and takes you from one little summit to another, one step after another, and nice you to the
lovely
Lord. And another simile that comes to my mind is that, you know, Sri Aurobindo is like that, you know, if you go to Ganges, so the origin is in the glacier, and the Gangotri glacier, and the place where it drips, Gomukh is the place where it begins to drip. So there is the unity of them. Glacier is at the peaks of Himalaya. So in the peaks, they are one. But then Himalaya can't come to us, but it comes to us through the Ganga, which flows through Gomukh, Gangotri, all the way. It gets sullied, everything. And if you want to go to the ocean, enter the Ganga. If you want to find the route upward, go by the side of the Ganga. If there is a way, you will climb. You will reach there. So she is the one who connects us to the ultimate summits, and she is the one who connects the ultimate summits to the most ground reality. So this is my experience. This is how I would...
That one of my favorite essays of his is the Mata.
Yeah.
I read that almost every week, at least once. It's not just two. And then I watch the mothers talk on, there's the four mothers, there's the 12 attributes. And we try and practice that. It's wonderful, you know.
Yeah, and he has given a new understanding. Otherwise, you know, worship meant something just external. But if I have to worship Mahalakshmi, I must ensure that beauty and harmony in my thoughts, beauty and harmony in my feelings, beauty and harmony in my life, in actions, is surrounding. That is true worship. So worship is not just about externally masked. Be her.
Be Mahalakshmi.
Yes. Yeah. So it's so wonderful, very practical. If you want to worship Mahakali, be prepared to slay the ego.
So let me ask you one question, and then I'll hand it over to everybody. So my question is that you as an agnostic,
yes,
right, have huge mystical experiences, get completely overwhelmed, dragged and sucked in by all kinds of conspiracies and sucked into this place, right? So what is your day like? What is sadhana like for you to be this, trying to be this super mind being that you want to be or emerging into?
Actually, if you ask me, my aspiration is nothing except mother. Like, supermind for me is on the side, very frankly, because as Sri Aurobindo said, if you find mother, you find everything.
Mm.
She is the path, she is the goal, and I understand now by her grace, I've glimpsed what the supramental is, but that's not what I am really striving for. My core is to love her, to serve her, and to know her more and more so that I can serve her better. Because service without knowledge is pretty dangerous, and love without knowledge is also a fanaticism. So to know, to serve better and love better, that's the core. It starts with a little prayer, and then I have a set of, you know, messages, something from their writings and something which I write myself.
Downloads or inspirations for you?
Inspiration.
You just open any page that counts.
No, this Mother Sri Aurobindo's writings and Savitri are in regular flow. And then every day I am inspired to write too many, many, many things. But one of them is Songs of the Soul, which is going on last 1 year.
That's what you're writing now.
Yeah, yeah. No, they are my prayers every
day. Chatting of that.
Which I share with everybody.
There's like a newsletter you send.
Yeah.
And daily inspiration.
In the morning. And
hume bhi list mein dal dijiye.
Ah, zarur, zarur. Definitely. Glad.
I said, add me to the list also.
It will be an honor.
And I'll share it with all of you.
So... and some reflections. So morning is spent in all this. Then I get ready. 7 o'clock, my day starts with Desiree Round. So there I live. No, Desiree is the old people where there are about 50 people, less than that, right?
They're all ashramites.
All ashramites who are in
the... I don't care for them.
So yes, I'm supposed to care for them, and I try my best. That's all. But it's not an easy task with the elderly. So anyways, so that's something joy again, because you're serving those who have... Some of them have served her, seen her, and as such, serving people who have given their life to something very beautiful and fire. But that spirit of service was there even in AFO, that, you know, that's how I'm doing. But now it's service to the mother. So it's not like I'm serving people, but serving the mother in this way. Then of course I go to the ashram, come back, go to dispensary, come back, have a quick lunch.
So how many hours do you spend the dispensary waiting for mother to send somebody to you?
No, so this dispensary and nursing home, it's about 3 hours.
Every day?
Every day. And then I come back, then there are a lot of, now there is a website called Ask Alokda where anybody can send questions. So Ask Alokda, because there are a lot of people who want to know. So though my talks get regularly published in Aroma, so people ask questions there also, but they are based on the talks. They hear a talk and want to, you know, ask questions. But there are people who don't know and they need not know. They have questions. There are young people who are going through relationship issues, who are going through depression, who want to just want metaphysical understanding about Mother Aurobindo, Vedanta, Tantra, anything. So it's an open site and all of this is free. So there is nothing like, you know, anybody can write, send a email. So that's a big work because now, you know, correspondence increases to if you have 10 letters and even if two are deep and profound, it takes time. Of course, I don't provide consultation because you can't have that kind of consultation.
Broad.
Broad, yes, yes. Somebody is going through, let's say, a problem, so.
But just one thing for everybody. Just like you call me Raja Da. Everybody here is called Da, who's of a senior level.
Da is like brother.
Because they all belong to a Bengali tradition they've joined. That's why.
So everybody is brother, so they all right.
They call me Raja Da. Raja Da. So
that's
Alok Da for you. Yeah. He's Alok Da.
So that's, and she makes us like a child. So it's so wonderful. Da is brother. You're not some elderly
guru figure.
Guru or something. So it's so wonderful. So then, in between, well, again, I get ready. I finish some of this, correspondence.
So afternoon is horizontal meditation?
Yeah.
Yeah.
For about 45 minutes.
Good.
And then I get this work I'm doing, replying to mails.
So then you spend the time.
Yeah.
How often do you do the Oromira talks and all that?
So then in the evening, but before that I again go to ashram for some meditation. Well, dispensary, again another 1 hour or 1.5 hours, followed by talks, in the evenings. Then just about an hour, have quiet dinner. So after the dinner, back to little bit of work, whatever is pending, last bit. Or if I have to say, give a talk, then I have to mark some passages from the book. So there are two kinds of talks. One are based on the book, other is direct.
When you watch his talks, it's just so enlightening. You know, you just feel you understand everything.
9:30, 10-ish, I'm back to
out.
Out and...
In the mother's lap?
Yes, in mother's lap. Literally in mother's lap. And then morning 5, I'm up and awake.
Good.
In a fight.
Yeah. Sometimes 10 stretches to 10, 15.
I wake them up at 4:30 and they complain. All right, so let's open it up. And Alex, do you want to start?
Sure. So I have like a lot of questions to ask. So, and so I don't know where to begin, but then, I'll just shoot. So, you know, one of the things that I've been reflecting on as we've been on our journey from Kathmandu down to here is the way that, you know, Sri Aurobindo and the mother seem to be initiating a new thing for humanity as far as spirituality, psychology, the whole way of being can be, right? But at the same time, and seeing the value of, you know, connecting to traditions that have a continuity, like a deep continuity with the past. These, you know, coming from the West, we've got this, you know, kind of new age spirituality in the West that I feel probably grew up in part because of the seed, the ripple that they cast or relay consciousness. But it's like we're trying to cook stuff up out of thin air. And then I come here and I feel this, you know, in engaging with Tantra here in Kathmandu or at Devi Korup, the depth that comes from that continuity of a tradition, it's really powerful. And yet I find myself thinking, you know, it's not for me to necessarily just go wholesale with a tradition. I know that I'm upon this more integral yoga path. So I just wanted to ask you, how do you see that kind of phase going?
So I myself, many of us have that rootedness. At least for me, it was right from childhood tradition. So I can tell you directly from experience, because I belong to a family where there were these traditional practices and I've seen temples and many things. almost every possible traditional element. So tradition has two aspects of it, the form and the spirit. Not going into metaphysics, but this is a well-known ancient division. Form is necessary because
so human... You mean the exoteric and the esoteric?
Yes, that way or, you know, very often form becomes karmakand, the rituals, outer rituals. So it has its place because an average person, if you say you go within and find the Divine Mother inside, it's very difficult. So when you go to a place like Meenakshi Madurai Temple, I'm just giving one example out of many. So you suddenly, you know, because that atmosphere is meant to be so charged, so it hits you or it stirs you or it moves something. So man needs both. He needs an external form to sustain his aspiration, and he also needs an inner connect. So we are an integral reality, not just cut off into. So traditions were one way of connecting with the outer realities, outer life, connecting it into or integrating it into the deeper spiritual past. So for example, in India, from birth to death and death to whatever, you have, you know, whole life is regarded as sacred. So you have some ritual for everything. When the child is in the womb, when the baby is born, when you are feeding, when he's writing, everything, there is a external, is part of tradition. It built into program. And they're very beautiful things, I must tell you that. Then once you understand the spirit, what happens with a tradition followed rigidly is that if you become rigid, then... I remember a man who was very uneasy. He was a sannyasi and traveling with me, and he was very uneasy because he couldn't take a bath. So I said, "So why do you want to take a bath?" He said, "Because I have to recite the mantra." I said, "You recite the mantra?" "No, no, I am not supposed to do it." So I told him, we were in train. I said, "Okay, you go to the washroom and take a bath." He said, "No, that dirty water." I said, "Okay, the train will stop somewhere and go out and take a bath." I was trying to
give him an answer.
So he said, "No, the train may go." So I even said, "We'll make sure we wait." So he was so uncomfortable all through, and for me it was so easy. So, you know, because Swami Vivekananda said, every day you must give yourself a physical bath and a spiritual bath. But if you don't have time for both, give yourself a spiritual bath. So that summarizes that, well, in form and the spirit is very important. Sometime when we are too much into the form, we tend to forget the spirit. We also may assume that because, you know, I'm doing these outer things, well, I'm already on the path. Like a pandit who reads the books may believe that he already knows God, but he may know nothing, because you may read all the books and yet know nothing of him. So here also it can happen anywhere. Here we have our own set of, you know, external things, like we go to the samadhi. But here there is nothing enforced. You may bow down, you may do pranam, you may light an agarbatti in the evening. Probably now, I think they have stopped it. You may participate, even meditation can become a tradition, you know. So, but...
Yeah, way of doing it.
Yeah, way of
worshipping.
But you should never forget that the real thing is what is going on inside. And the value of the external act is from within. If I give you a gift with an idea that you are going to give back something to me, and if I give you a gift because it's no more me, but I am moved from deep within to give you something, so there is a difference. So invariably, always, traditions are bound to break, not because they have no meaning, but because new forms are going to come.
Yes.
And that's what we see happening outside. As you rightly said, they are ripples. So obviously, people are not able to catch it. As often, sometimes I say jokingly, somebody wrote a book, The Religion of No Religion. So I said, "So you have made a religion of no religion."
Yeah.
Or somebody says, you know, getting free of all systems. So I ask them, "So you have made a system out of freedom from system." If they are really free, you are comfortable.
Semantic battle.
So that's how I look at it. Stay focused on the inner, which is the primary truth. And let the outer flow from within outward. Let it take the form which is most individually best for you. Like there are people at the ashram who will sit at the samadhi and they will sit for, you know, 10 minutes. For me, I just bow down once and I come back and sit for meditation. Somebody else may just stand there in adoration, silent adoration. So it should not be imposed, and it should not become like a collective convention for the sake of it, where as if by entering your name in the register of meditation,
you have been enlightened.
You are enlightened, or you are a specially favored one. So that's the only caveat. So these youngsters who are, as you said, outside, they need this guidance that you can't just be lost in the outer form, you know, just because it's more appealing. The value will always come from within. So you may have it's like the currency which changes, you know, long time back, in India, there used to be copper coins as currency. And its value was like, if you give that one copper coin, its value would be something like 96 paisa or, you know, 1 rupee, equivalent today. But if I take it today, it doesn't have a value. So I must understand the value was never in the coin. The value is something else. In fact, it's not even in the rupee. It's not in the dollar. Value is somewhere else, which is this is only a medium and means. So understand the medium and the means. It is important because life is not cut into two trenchant halves. It's one reality. But don't, if you have to always understand, the value of the outer comes from the inner.
So beautiful. That's all. I read the mother's words on something she said about how the older religions are like older relatives we must remember fondly.
Yes.
You know,
yes,
and that,
yes,
because as we create a new one, yes, we have to remember our elders fondly, you know, like, yes, lovingly, you know, yes, and then say, all good, but now something new.
Yes. You know? And also in all over the world, if you read through the history, everybody has seen the new generation with suspicion.
Yes.
That they are no good.
Always.
All over. 5,000 years back.
And then they become the new religion.
They become the new religion.
Okay, let's open it up. Let's go to Sam. Alright.
What is a realization or a truth you've discovered that you find to support for all beings in half?
What is the most important truth that I have discovered?
That all should have or can
most be practical shared. Truth, I will tell you that divine is in all beings and all creatures. And I think this one truth, there are several which flow from it. The whole creation is within the divine, and still bolder truth that all is the divine, but that may be little. But if we just remember that the divine presence in you, in him, in this object, in me and in the elephant is the same, it will solve many, many problems of mankind. And because people get lost in the form. So, you know, I had a friend, he is in Oroville, the elderly man, he would every day, whenever we meet, he would greet, sab kamali ke, you know, but there is only one
boss. Lord.
I said, yes, but don't say that, and that is the one whom I believe in. I said, then there is so the line is very thin. So, as if we know, now the beauty is now, that's where see the problem comes. All religions speak about it. But they give so much importance to the form. So if I start saying, no, only if you believe in Mother and Aurobindo that you are on some great path, then I am making the same error. Because he, even in the agnostic, he dwells. He dwells as if he is hidden, waiting for discovery. He is there even in the nihil, who doesn't believe in anything, for whom there is nothingness. He hides in the nothingness. So this idea, so don't give it a structure, even by the mind, that there is a divine presence in everyone will solve problem. If I have a fight or somebody fights with me, he'll solve relationship issues. Because if the wife or husband, gets angry, it is mother who is telling me something. Maybe she is Kali. Or Kali sakshat hoye gelo. So that was the ancient ideal in India. Actually, if you see that everything is sacred, everything is imbued by the divine presence. The river, the mountains, and life is so wonderful. But again, it gets lost in the form. So people will put all kinds of things in the Ganges, thinking that that's not what it means. She is sacred because she flows from the heart of Vishnu. She flows from the locks of Shiva. She flows from the Kamandalu of Brahma. She comes as a result of the tapasya of man. So if you really look at Ganga, she carries all these elements in her flowing. So when we take a dip with this idea within, that the outer form of Ganga holds within her, all these great gods and the aspiration of man, it does wonder. But if I just keep, you know, putting flowers and putting dirt, then that's not what.
No.
So that's where one has to be very careful. The line can be very thin.
It's so funny because I think Swami Vivekananda said that it is the agnostic who will make the greatest saint.
But that's true, because he have gone through everything and realized the
doubt.
Realize the limitations.
Yes. Yes. Sri Ramakrishna. Does anybody else like to ask the question? Yes.
For honey stained brown day.
Very simple. Inner work should not be disconnected with outer reality. Outer reality is a means to awaken us to something within. For example, well, one way to look at it, inner work is I set aside time when I sit and, you know, I'm observing myself. It has its place, importance, to be a witness, wonderful. But everyday life, say somebody gets angry at me, somebody insults me, or somebody praises me. Now that's the time I should see what are my reactions. And it goes on every day. And if I observe my reactions, and I see, oh, there is still this old fellow, the ego. There is still this desire, and as long as it is desire, today I am getting praise and I am feeling very happy. Now I start seeking praise, next level. Now because I am seeking praise, I start tweaking my words to suit the other person, to extract praise, get to own
praise.
So slowly I deviate from my own truth. And tomorrow, as it would happen, somebody would blame me, always in the world, to believe that everybody is praising you, is either your or a psycho fan, or he's fooling you. So if I am seeking praise, tomorrow somebody will insult me and he'll hurt me very badly. So what happened? There was an outer occasion, and it helped me to look inside in the inner movement. So all life is like that. That, well, there is an external event, and it's the anvil through which our consciousness must pass to be refined, purified, to be, you know, made more supple, to be made more wide. It's easy to say God is in everyone, but supposing somebody criticizes me. You don't know who I am. Now I have finished. Now if there is a little child saying, what nonsense are you speaking? That's the time I have to see God is probably telling me that, look here.
Now listen,
yeah. Listen to me. So, grounded means to me that. Grounded is not that I have to navigate.
Sit on the earth.
No, there's another meaning to it, that how do I earn a livelihood? Now, you know, things like that. How do I go through life? So there I can tell you it's a leap of faith. In my own life I have seen, I can share this experience which I last 30 years or more, 35 years almost. I have not bought anything for myself. But everything comes. So there is a line in the Gita, says yoga kshema. You do the yoga, and kshema is taking care, and divine takes care of you. Now that's a leap of faith, because the divine will not give a written contract. I'll take care. But if you read the lives of people, sometimes, you know, Shobindu speaks of it, that I know God will provide to me, but he has a bad habit of providing the last moment, because he doesn't know dinner will be there a lot. He has contracted a bad habit. So to be cheerful,
there always have to be that much tension.
Yeah. Like, so simplest way to go through life, being grounded to everything, is to have faith that there is a divine wisdom, and we may not understand its ways with our little mind. Just as a little baby doesn't understand why his mother has snatched away that mobiles or from his hands, or the toy from his hands. So we may not understand. It's okay. But I should not feign that I understand, because when people blame, complain, that means you have understood what was in God's mind. You say he is very cruel, that means I have assumed. Now I should not be assuming anything. Let me trust if there is a wisdom. Again, I go back to the same logic. If there is no wisdom, then nothing carries any sense. Frankly, then life has no meaning. But if there is a wisdom, whether you call it God or not, then it knows its steps. So let us learn to trust, have faith, and focus should be on what you are doing at hand. So if you are doing a work in any setup and you don't get rewarded, you don't get promoted, so obviously you are still there, and people are moving up the ladder, it's okay, because you have chosen, made a choice that I want to do the work well. That's a choice you have made, and there is a joy when you come back. You're not wondering, oh, I didn't get, people are like that, you're not hitting you know, bottle on the rocks or complaining, grumbling. But such a satisfied person, because ultimately you did what you had to do. So the only focus being grounded is be fully focused on what you are doing. Do it sincerely. Do it with dedication. If you can do it as a worship and your prayer to God, that look here, this is what I can offer. And do it with that dedication, whatever be the work, from, you know, sweeping the floor to fighting a battle, all these things. Then you will always be grounded, because that's your means for puja. You're not going to a temple. You're not performing a ritual. The clang of the tools and the clash of the swords is your ritual.
Hmm. I want to take that a little further with you, right, on that point, right? Because the mother speaks, and Sri Aurobindo also wrote about money being energy.
Yes.
Right? About money being energy. And spiritual people from very early are taught that money is bad.
Yeah.
Money is, a, you know, seeking money to do. But Sri Aurobindo always said that it is not the money that is bad. It is the choice we make on what we are doing with that money, or what we're going to do when we acquire that money. What is your take on that?
So fundamentally, if you take the Vedantic viewpoint, if all is the divine, nothing is fundamentally bad. That's the viewpoint that a Vedantic should take, or anyone who ever believes in God. Now, coming to money, and that includes a whole lot of things which are considered bad, which may go, you see, after all, Tantra took even that boldest approach that all the things which were banned or taboo
should be celebrated.
They took that also, but that's a vast subject. But let's say that money, it is evident it is a force. After all, that currency note doesn't have a value. And now...
what it stands
for. Yes, what it stands for. And in different times, you give different value. Today, you are measuring things by gold standard, which is wonderful. Tomorrow, it may be platinum standard or rhodium standard. I mean, the most expensive...
digital standard.
Digital standards. Who knows? So ultimately, it is simply a power which is people, it basically deep within, it implies that there is a constant interchange in the universe. Deep within, it's about the yajna. So I may shun money, hate money, but even a sannyasi, when he goes and asks for food, somebody who is giving it to him has got it through money.
With money.
So you can't deny that, well, there is an interchange in the universe. Now, there are means of this interchange. The means can be, well, if you are giving money, I should give you some value for it. I'm using it at a very, very crude outer level.
Transaction.
So what should be the transaction? Sometimes a blessing and a goodwill is a transaction. That's why you see in ancient times, the gurus did not shun money, but they use the word guru dakshina. What does it mean? I don't put a price tag on what you will receive. Maybe a blessing. Maybe knowledge. You cannot put a price tag also, because it's not mine. This used to be one of my problems, that if I practice medicine outside, I can't charge money. This, you know, now I'll show that. But I need money. So I had found a way that, okay, I'll put an offering box.
Sure.
But then ultimately I realized that, well, what the divine will give you through whatever hands, he will pass on to you. When he gives you, don't shun it. Oh, no, I don't take. That's ego. And somebody taught this to me in the US. I've been traveling every year since 2000. Except the COVID time and once more it. So, when I would go, if somebody, okay, my travel expense people will give, but when somebody would give me a gift, no, I don't want it. So there was a, he's a Russian, and he suddenly says, you know, Alokda, long back, this is 2001 or 2, very young. He said, you know what, Alokda, you have wonderful things, but basically you still have the ego of the receiver. He struck me that it's God who spoke. I said, what is
lesson learned from the mother?
Lesson learned from the mother. I said, this is something which I am receiving from mother. I should use it rightly.
Now what you choose to do with it...
with it is mine. So this was a lesson learned. So now whatever comes, I keep it and I use it rightly, wisely. That's where each one's own thing...
lies its own way.
It finds its own way. You can't standardize it that give 10% here or do this. That's because everybody has their own path. So it's simply money is a recognition of the force that we are not alone. There is an interchange going on all the time in this universe. And much of it is going on silently, unseen, without the use of money.
Beautiful.
But money, at the most external level, you need some kind of thing for, outer life, framework of life. And then this outer framework may be just for sustenance or for creating beauty and divinity.
Or beautiful things.
Yes, so beauty and divinity.
And part of that integral idea with
Absolutely.
Consciousness. So now, we have a few minutes left.
Yeah.
Let's, why don't you take us through, not a meditation, but a guided way of thinking that we can absorb with you that helps us begin this journey, you know?
That's the most tough one.
Not tough one, but it's most deepest.
Deepest one. And we want the deep. We don't want the shallow.
Let's just be present. Just be present. Don't even try to do anything. Just be present. And conceive your highest aspiration, whatever it be. Whatever is each one's highest aspiration. It could be an ideal, a longing. Highest that you can conceive of. And give it the shape of a flame in the heart. The highest longing and aspiration. The image of the flame. This is a living flame carrying our aspiration to the seat of fulfillment. And the seat of fulfillment is whatever name you want to give it. To me, it is Mother.
Mother.
Because Mother means the womb of everything. She is a formative power. Don't need complicated mantras, wonderful though they are. A mother understands even the cry of a child. She understands the pain of a child. She understands the struggles of a child. Even if he doesn't share with her. There is a little tree line in Savitri. Even as a mother shares her children's lives, she puts forth a small portion of herself. A being no bigger than the thumb of man in the heart to forget the bliss and face the pain. So this little flame, now image the mother in whatever way you want to. To me, this is the whole universe and beyond the universe. Vaster than the vastest. Beyond human conceptions, because lovelier than the loveliest. More beautiful than the beautifulest. An absolute wisdom, an absolute power. Love that leans into the depths, into the abyss. Love that is at work in the stones. Love that is at work in plants, turning them towards the light. Love that is at work in the beast and man. She is. And that love is right behind this flame. Helping it to rise. Holding it as a mother holds the child in a lap. She is the mother. the initiator of the journey. Even before the journey was initiated, she was behind, hidden. We didn't see her, as a child in the womb knows not Tamta. But the mother is still there, feeding us with her own blood. And when he comes out, he recognizes her. It is the only difference. The difference between initiation and not being initiated is merely a fact of recognition.
No.
Recognition of what was always there, already there. Recognition makes it beautiful. So she is the mother holding us as a mother holds the child. And now the flame is not alone, but being carried by the mother up and up and up, higher and higher. Let her consciousness spread wide into the vastnesses of skies beyond skies and earths beyond earths and universes. The vastness which goes beyond space and time. And stay there for a while, drinking from the deepest source of love, drinking light and bliss, drinking peace. And as we come back, she comes with us. Never does she leave us. Back to our hearts. And a love spreads into the mind, building beautiful thoughts. Her love enters the speech, filling our speech with strains of truth. Her love melts into our hearts, filling it with sweetness and delight. Her love invigorates our life, frees it from all fatigue. Her love enters the body and every cell, turning this body into a temple and abode, turning this body into a vessel and a jar, turning this body into her instrument for her purposes. And we shall close with this poem of Sri Aurobindo, which describes this process. The golden light. Thy golden light came down into my mind. Thy golden light came down into my brain. The grey rooms of my mind sun-touched became a bright reply to wisdom's occult plane. A calm illumination and a flame. Thy golden light came down into my throat, and all my speech is now a song divine. A pain song of thee, my single note. My words are drunk with the immortal's wine. Thy golden light came down into my heart, smiting my life with thy eternity. And now has it grown a temple where only thou art, and all my passions point towards only thee. Thy golden light came down into my feet. My earth is now thy playfield and thy seat. Ma, Om Anandamayi,
yeah.
Chaitanyamayi, Satyamayi,
Aladavi,
Ma.
Ma,
Chemo.
Chemos. Oh.